Yo, what is up, lacrosse world? We are officially halfway through April, coming to the end of conference play. The weather is finally starting to turn a corner, and every game feels so big. So it definitely feels like lacrosse season. I'm Dan Abram. We got Kyle Devitt. We're actually together today, so
yes.
I'm in within strangling distance of Kyle today.
I mean, you could escape. Yeah. There's a door that way. You'll be fine. We're back with the best recap in the game. And this train is rocketing towards a small speck in the distance, Dan. We can see it, size of a fingernail, the end of the regular season. It's upon us. Soon the playoffs will be here. All of this tomfoolery and shenanigans that we've been doing will be finished. Win or go home. It's already that time for some teams. So let's fill all the people in with another episode of In the Crease.
Let's go. This weekend, perhaps more than most, this season provided clarity as to who's for real, who's for not this season. Let's dive straight into the action. First game, we're a couple hours fresh off of it. Maryland 11, Rutgers 10.
Connor Kelly game blouses.
Yeah. So after the game, there was some strong praise from John Tillman on Connor Kelly, which doesn't happen very often. He said he hasn't seen a better player out there, and that he hasn't seen any player that has as big an impact. And, you know, as a guy who's covered Maryland really closely the past 5 or so years, I'm not sure I can recall such individual praise. And we've had a lot of great players come through the Maryland program in that time, most notably the first Wharton winner, Matt Rambo. So that's a big deal. And he was outstanding in this game. Really looks like he's playing a game that is slowed down for him.
Yeah.
It just seems so effortless, whether it's, you know, the pinpoint skip passes or the shot on the run that nails opposite pipe. There were just a few Maryland players that went quiet in this game, and I thought Michael Rexrow did a good job on Jared Bernhardt limiting him. So I don't feel like Maryland wins this game without number one.
Yeah, I mean, not to start it off with a gripe, but I could not follow along. Because apparently providing live stats is a luxury that the defending NCAA champions cannot afford today. Maybe it was the rain.
Blame it on the weather.
I will tell you, this game played out exactly how I thought it would. Maryland goes up early. Rutgers digs deep. Orchestrates a frenzied comeback, only to ultimately fall short. It's the same case I made earlier this week on Game Day Live. Rutgers is really, really good. Maryland is great.
Yeah, Maryland 100% let them back in the game at 5-1. And I knew at that point that, you know, Rutgers was not going to go quietly. I think a few people thought maybe this would be a blowout in favor of the Terps. But I just knew that how gritty this Rutgers team has seemed to be, particularly the past couple of weeks or so. But Maryland 100% let them back into the game with the constant accruement of penalties in the second quarter. It was Meathead Maryland and just not necessary, and it provided the spark that Rutgers needed to get back into the game. And I know this sounds obvious, but Rutgers looked deflated to lose this one. Their body language made it seem like they just lost the national championship in overtime. You know, a couple weeks ago you said that Rutgers seems to make, you know, critical errors late in games that prevent them from winning against these top caliber teams, and that prevents you from kind of ranking them amongst the top caliber teams. I'm not necessarily sure if I agree with that, but they definitely lost this game by the slimmest of margins. They lost the Hopkins game by seemingly the slimmest of margins, and that does seem to be a defining factor of many of their losses the past 2 or 3 years. Because I'm going to be real, I went to this game with my dad, and I turned around, I think it was 10-8, 10-9 or something. I was like, yeah. Rutgers is going to win this game because they had it. And they should have won. They were playing really good defense up until about 8 or 6 minutes left in the game, until that Anthony DeMayo goal, and that opened the floodgates in favor of Maryland. I also thought they kind of evened it out at the faceoff X late in the game. But it's just like, I was like, Rutgers is going to finally win this big game, and they just let it slip again.
But that's why Maryland is great, right? That's why I regard Maryland as a great team, especially so far this season. The one loss to Albany aside, They go down in games. Like, don't get me wrong. They're not a dominant greatness. That's not the kind of greatness they have. They have grittiness. And they, you know, you said that Rutgers has that as well. I just think that Maryland has that, plus the talent, plus the ability to score, plus a defense that once they figure out what you're doing, right, they're going to stop you.
Yeah, so. And still really impressed by Rutgers. And honestly, the four teams I project to make the Big Ten tournament seem a lot better than most of the top teams in the country. I think the Big Ten right now seems a lot stronger than the ACC.
Oh, yeah. No. You said that like real casual. Say it again.
So I feel like right now the four teams that I project to make the Big Ten tournament, Maryland, Hopkins, Penn State, and Rutgers, are playing better than their counterparts in the ACC. I feel like maybe they're not better, but they are definitely playing better at the moment.
Okay, so you shot for the moon, you missed, and tried to hit something else. I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
You just pulled it back a little bit. That's fine. You can walk it back. It's a safe space here.
Okay.
On the internet.
This is not safe space because, like,
it's definitely not safe space.
You're literally within strangling distance of me.
I don't play for these teams. I don't care.
There's helmets. There's sticks. There's
yeah, it's fine. There's a lot of weapons in the IL studio. I'll give you that.
Lots of weapons.
It's probably too many.
Yeah. Lots of weapons.
Yeah.
So, you know, one point that you made not too long ago was that Maryland is kind of, like, coming away with these games and making, you know, comebacks, being down, finding a way to win. I feel like this team, it may not be better than last year's team in terms of talent, but there's a certain killer instinct that they have this year that they haven't had maybe the past two seasons, where they're finding themselves in games where they're down or there's like a kind of like a haphazard situation, and they just kind of find a way to work through it. And they're winning the games that sometimes they may have lost the past couple years. I don't know what it is. It just seems like the experience and the poise is just so much stronger this year than it has been.
Well, that's what it is. It's the experience. It's the experience of not failing. It's the experience of succeeding. You know, I that's probably the worst way I could have put it, but I really think that that's true. You don't know how to do it till you do it. And then they did it, and they're like, oh, this is an achievable thing for us. There are no such things as curses. That's me looking at the camera. There's no such thing as curses. Okay? It's not true. History does not dictate everything.
There's no streaks, no curses, no nothing.
Players dictate success. Coaches guarantee it. Toman, I as much as I've said hateful things about Maryland, mostly just to make fun of you, but several people have taken it personally and it's come back on me. But I don't think I've ever spoke really ill of Toman except for his handling of some media interviews that he did last year. But other than that, I regard him as one of the best tactical coaches in NCAA, in Division I, II, or III. I just think he has a plan. He has an expectation. And if you play for him, you know what those things are. You can't always say that as a player about every coach.
Yeah.
So I think that's something he's really got going for him. And it's something that has given stability to this Maryland program. And the win last year, the championship, did more for this team, I think, than anything that has been done for the Maryland men's lacrosse program ever.
Let's give a shout out to our sponsor, Trimino. Oh, protein is an important part of any athlete's diet. Supplement your protein diet without excess calories and fat by going with Trimino protein-infused water. Go beyond hydration with Trimino protein-infused water packed with protein and B vitamins to sustain your game. Trimino has 7 grams of whey protein, no sugars, no carbs, no fats, and only 28 calories. It's the perfect drink to have after your game or after a workout. Trimino, you can get it at CVS, local retailers near you, and always on Amazon. Protein never tasted so good. Kyle, let's go to our much-aligned T-shirt pitch of the week, which is actually going to get morphed into scoreboard.
Yeah, so I actually wanted to move the scoreboard up to here because this segment has been so unsuccessful. We have to start with a key America East result. UMBC 5, Binghamton 2.
Two.
Two. Two. Not one, not three, but two. Two goals. A Bearcat is not even a real animal. But it should still score more than two goals. Two. Come on, man.
Talk about two.
Two?
So
this is actually the T-shirt pitch of the week, a rant about scoring two goals on a shirt. For those of you that think this segment is terrible, you're right. Bear has produced at least three designs that have gone to print, one of which you have not seen unless you watch the IL Epic Game Day Recap. So we're going to keep doing it until the playoffs, because, Dan, playoffs are serious.
Yes. So do you think we should get a 2? T-shirt, just like a text?
Yeah. Yes. With all the team's mascots that scored 2.
That's actually a really good idea.
I see.
The sad part is I know the people out there will actually buy it.
Yeah. People wanted this segment. 2? This is for the people.
This is for the people. Kyle, let's go into Tewaratawn Watch. Give me your top 3 right now.
Very similar to last week, although I made one bump. I still have Trevor Baptiste up here. I feel like he's going to fall on your list. 18 for 22 against St. John's. The funny part is when I was scoring that game, and I asked some people in the war room here at IL what they thought his faceoff total would be. And they were like, I'm going to say, it was Zach Babbo. He did the math. He's like, there's probably 22 draws. And I think I'm going to go conservative, 20 out of 22. And it was 18 for 22. And when I said 18 to Zach, he was visibly disappointed. He's like, oh, that's a down day. How are we at the point where 18 for 22 is a down day for anybody?
Yeah.
Baptiste is a monster. He's one of the best to ever do it. Still my number one. Connor Kelly, fresh off of basically just
a million goals and assists,
decimating Rutgers. He's number 2 very easily. And then number 3, I still have Justin Gutterding in there, thereabouts. Still underrated somehow, still not given his due, but I'm giving it now.
So I'm going to keep up with what I've been doing and going with 4. I'm going to keep Justin Gutterding in the number 1 spot because there's no reason for me to have him slip.
Okay.
2 is actually going to be Connor Kelly again.
Okay.
I actually feel like today's performance against Rutgers basically solidified him to show up as one of the 5 finalists. Like, Maryland could lose the rest of their games and he'll still be there after everything he's done so far through this point in the season. 3, that's where we find Trevor Baptiste for me.
Yeah.
He's another guy. He's like, he's going to be there just because he's Trevor Baptiste.
Yeah.
He's going to be there. Like, he's going to show up. 4 is a little bit of a twist.
Okay.
Fields is out.
Oh.
Jeff Teat is in.
Yes.
Jeff Teat.
Sophomore Jeff Teat, who has no chance of winning the Tewaratawn just because he's a sophomore.
Yeah.
Hey, Tewaratawn people. Are you listening?
I believe before this weekend started.
Ageism.
I believe before this weekend started that he led the nation in points. And I was like, wow, he's really doing it. He's really putting himself in the talk.
He's been doing it.
I know. But like we said last week, I feel like his chances this year to maybe be a finalist are better than Michael Sauer's ever were at any point last season.
I don't think that's unrealistic at all. Not just because Sauer's was a freshman, but because Teat is so. The thing is, the thing about that Cornell offense is you could take him off of it and they would still be good. But he's the guy that brings them to that next level where literally anything is possible. Like 20 goals is expected. The fact that they didn't drop at least 15 against Lehigh, I think is a little disappointing, but it wasn't his fault. You know what I mean? Like he still had 6 points, which I think it's his 6th game in a row with 6 points.
Yeah.
At least. Or no, sorry, his 6th game in a row with at least 4 assists and 3rd game in a row with at least 6 points. That's crazy. That's crazy. I think we're kind of spoiled by all these totals. A little bit, and we kind of just write it off as like, oh, well, they're not playing anybody. Guess what? They are. Beat Syracuse.
Beat Lehigh.
Beat Lehigh. No slouch.
Still in my top 20.
I support that coming in at number 4. But speaking of Tewaratawn committee, are you hiring? Because I hope you are. Because I'm looking for a side hustle. Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing that your job is being seen by the right candidates. ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you can receive the best quality matches. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. Find out why ZipRecruiter is being used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. One more time, because free things are dope. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse to try it right now.
Kyle, next game we're talking about Penn State 14, Johns Hopkins 12. First ever victory for the Nittany Lions against Johns Hopkins. And Penn State did what they didn't do against Maryland, and that was close the game. When Hopkins came swinging in the second half, they absorbed the blows, closed it out. The ball was humming for Penn State in this game, in and out of sticks. So impressed with how quick they moved it, and it was the difference in the early going because they had a ton of real estate and big percentage looks early in the game.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Penn State's use of short undercuts to get open from underneath, faking the backdoor cut just enough to get the defenseman's attention, then quickly shifting back the other direction with a stick up. In a strong hand, it just created havoc for the Hopkins defense. You know, those defenders were definitely prepared for one-on-one matchups, but the total team movement of PSU, I think, was a little too much for them to handle. Penn State used this tactic from the top down, so they would have guys cut from underneath near GLE or X and do the fake inside, come all the way around on a C-cut, and then they would flip it, which is, you know, the invert, which we've seen from them a bunch. It's just tremendous off-ball effort from the entirety of their first six on offense.
And what a performance from Gerard Arceri in this game, playing on an artificial hamstring and being so effective that Hopkins resorted to putting a long pole on the faceoff in the first quarter. Just another not-so-great day at the faceoff X for Johns Hopkins.
So you're saying he might have used a performance-enhancing hamstring?
There's some sort of, like, contraption that they taped to his leg. Like, did you see this picture that was on Twitter?
Yeah.
So, I don't know what it is, but I know Alex Woodall used it last year at one point.
Okay.
And as far as I know, it's street legal.
So. All right. As long as it's NCAA legal, man. Do whatever you got to do. But, yeah, he was excellent. I don't want to overreact from one game, but I might have to move Hunter Moreland down in my draft ranks from this. You know, just like a spot, like one or two. I think that's enough. I think at times it looked like on the draws, especially the wing unit for Hopkins was moving in slow motion, you know, waiting for the ball to get past a certain point before they would attack it, kind of like waiting to see who picks it up almost so they could just pounce. It seemed like the plan was definitely to jump the ball carrier. And every time they did that, it left this little space behind them open for a Penn State guy to run to. I think Hopkins just would have been better served busting ass back to the hole so the recovery was there, because that's what they were missing. They were missing that recovery on the backside to stop what ostensibly were layups for PSU.
Yeah. And Shaq Stamick leaving the game felt impactful. I think people forget just how much he knows what he's doing back there.
Yeah.
Like, he's an extremely reliable player and so effective during their win streak in particular. But that's not to say that the offense was, like, discombobulated in this game, and it didn't fall apart. They were actually able to – I think it took them some time, and it actually just looked like when they were going through their progressions on the possessions that it just took a little bit longer to find those looks. But I think that's the point I'm trying to make, is that it was still good, but it just felt a little off without him.
Yeah, I agree to a point. I think after he left, it seemed like Hopkins had trouble going to their plan B, because plan A and B is attacking short sticks. Usually they have, when they have trouble scoring like that, they will sweep Cole Williams or Iso Tinney, both of which did happen. But with Stanwyck out, perhaps telling them to do that when he's on the field, you know, as a coach on the field, we didn't see it happen until it was basically too late for them to come back in the game.
Yeah, and of course we can't talk about this game without talking about Colby Kinese. I think 14 saves 14 in this saves, game, yeah. And really clutch down the stretch, made a few doorstop stuffs to kind of seal the victory. Let's talk about what this win does for positioning in the Big Ten. We kind of talked about it with the Rutgers-Maryland game, but Hopkins was riding high, you know, all the way up to like number two or three in a lot of polls. Kind of felt like they were unbeatable. And then Penn State, seemingly overnight, and by overnight, I mean the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Has really come on and basically said, we are here to contend in the Big Ten.
They have definitely changed something about their approach. That's for sure. Either it's a tactical change on the field, which I don't think it is, because we all know with Coach Tambo there, they're going to be an offensive focused team. That's what he was hired for. That's what he is good at. He is good at setting up systems that score. I think maybe, I don't know if it's the defense tightening up. I don't think we saw that. I don't think the defense, I think the defense made several errors, but not enough to swing the game to Hopkins. But I think that offensively, they found a way to free up Mac O'Keefe, which is huge. You cannot discount his impact on a game. They turned turnovers into goals, which is crazy. I really think it's a lot of it is due to off-ball movement, like I was saying earlier. But there's something else going on there that I think we might be missing.
Did you see the uniforms in this game, Kyle? Because I actually thought both looked pretty slick in this game.
Ooh, can we talk about the fresh, all-white Cascade S helmets with gray ghosted decals that Hopkins rocked? I mean, my God. Chills.
Filth.
Chills. You know what, Dan? Do you know where you can get a helmet like that?
Sideline Swap.
That's right. SidelineSwap.com. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear, shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves for up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college or pro gear. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to SidelineSwap.com. That's SideLineSwap.com, or download the iPhone app today.
Kyle, we've got an early 90s throwback. Syracuse 13, UNC 12 in overtime. Huge comeback from the Orange. You have an interesting anecdote about this one.
Oh, okay, so I want to set the scene for this. I was here in the IL War Room. We had Chris Rosenthal here to film MLL stuff. He went to Cuse. We had Stephanie Mindock, who is our video producer and admin, and she went to Cuse. We also had Zach Babbo here to craft our game day recap. And where do you think he went, Dan?
Cuse.
Correctamundo, Syracuse. So I'm watching this game surrounded by orange bleeding hearts. Luckily, I picked Syracuse on game day live on Friday, so it wasn't awkward. What was awkward is watching Cuse appear to fall completely apart in the fourth quarter, only to witness a comeback that could help define this team's season with several Orange fans around me. I felt as if I was in the dome.
Yeah, Syracuse now 4-0 in the ACC. Cardia Cuse, man. I know that cliche, the shtick gets old, but this team just finds ways to win in close ones. Brendan Curry was the hero in this game, a few goals and the game-winning assist on an absolutely crazy pass to Brendan Bomberry. We've talked about Cuse's style a lot, and it just seems to be score by committee and ride the hot hand of the game. It was Curry in this one, but we've seen Solomon, Rafis, Dordovic, and Bomberry step up in different games. They've micromanaged the midfield so well, that Syracuse staff. But it's just been a weird season for Cuse in the sense that they're 4-0 in the ACC, yet 3-4 out of conference. And those four losses are all, like, really raising my eyebrows. Like, I'm like, how do you, like, get blown out and then turn around and beat a really quality opponent in the ACC?
I'm really mad that I don't have a joke about eyebrow raising for you, but the thing is, what's interesting to me is actually on the other side of the ball. I'm not discounting your point at all. I think it's definitely something to consider. But the thing that's interesting is how well Carolina played for such long stretches here. You know, they were efficient. They went to Cage without any trepidation. They slid hard on defense. They didn't shy away from the big plays. They didn't get burned constantly by Cuse Dodgers. They were in this. They were running this. North Carolina played like a team that belonged in a fist fight with Syracuse. They did not play like a team that was scared to lose their seventh game, even though, unfortunately, that's what happened. So my takeaway is actually on the other side of the ball, and I don't want to give any credit for moral victories. We don't support moral victories here on the In the Crease podcast, right? Or do we? Do you like moral victories?
We don't support them, but we may acknowledge that they exist.
We acknowledge them.
We acknowledge they exist, fair. But
it's like kids
they just
on
don't
the beach.
Do anything for you. You know, it's like we talked about
beaches.
Win your games.
Yeah.
Win your games.
Win your games.
You got to win your games. You want the praise, you got to win the games.
Yeah.
I feel like I've watched so much of Carolina this year, and I feel like this was easily the best game that they played, and they're now 7-game losing streak. They did not have Justin Anderson in this game. Him being out, they filled in with Matt Gavin, who's actually really played good lacrosse the past 2 weeks or so. They pushed in transition, like you said. They capitalized on some risky passes and plays, just pushed it, kind of just said, we've got nothing to lose. The Rowlett goal is a prime example. He just played hard and with passion. He just said, I'm going to get mine in this game. But up by three really late in the fourth quarter, they just let it slip through their hands yet again. When they went up by three, I thought it was over.
Well, they had a man up.
Exactly.
And then they didn't convert on that man up. And actually, publisher Terry Foy pointed this out. They were like, we'll be fine. Nope. Too much time. Too much time. And Cuse took it. You can't close the door on the youngsters. They'll kick it open.
Yeah, it's just like there's so many small plays late you can point to that could have prevailed Carolina in this game. The one I'm thinking of is like, I think it was 12-11. Carolina was winning. Off the faceoff, there's a huge scrum, and the ball actually emerges for a UNC long pole, and he just can't get a clean handle on it. I think it rolls out of bounds. It stays Syracuse ball. Of course, we know what happens. They tie the game. It just kind of feels like these things keep happening to them. It's really starting to become a frustrating season, and it's, you know, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but it's kind of over.
Have we seen the return of the Dome Gods? Is that what you're saying? I feel like that's what you're saying.
Maybe.
They have paid the tithe to the Dome Gods, and they were blessed with that extra possession. You know what the tithe is?
That is a Shakespearean major.
You paid the
tithe.
No. That's actually like Cajun. So there's chatter over how the tiebreakers work in the ACC, but we know that Cuse and Duke are in. There's one game left that matters, and that's North Carolina hosting Notre Dame next Saturday. The Heels are the only team without a win in the ACC. Do they get it next week against the obviously snake-bit Irish and force everyone to do the maths? Or no?
So I've talked to a few maths people. Carolina needs a 14-goal victory to get into the ACC tournament over Notre Dame. That's just how the tiebreakers work. Which, you know, given how good Notre Dame's defense is and the fact that I don't think anybody's had a 14-goal margin of victory, except maybe Yale. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Oh, yeah. and Loyola.
Yeah. But I just don't see that happening. They are 100% playing for pride next weekend. It's alumni weekend. Throwback to 2 years ago. Same situation. Needed to win late in the year against Notre Dame at home in alumni weekend. We know how that story ends. They have a great senior class that's going to be really proud of that championship they won in 2016. I think they do beat Notre Dame next weekend, but not by 14 goals. Notre Dame is sneaking into the ACC tournament here, and Carolina's road's coming to an end.
So I have a plan for Notre Dame. Do you know the story about the Utah Jazz and Michael Jordan? No?
No.
I'm going to go with no, because it happened like probably before.
It happened in the 90s. It happened Dan in doesn't the 90s. Know anything about the
90s. Dan's a child. It's true. So the Utah Jazz, the pizza place that the Bulls ordered pizza from, they basically, it was bad pizza, and they sent it to the Bulls anyway, and they all got sick and they still won. So my plan is for North Carolina and all their alumni to take over a pizza place or wherever Notre Dame gets their food. Unfortunately, I don't think Notre Dame players are eating pizza, given that they have a hot dog steak game in the fall. But I feel like you can definitely get some access to their food and maybe, like, pull a little Wild Wild Country on there. You know what I'm saying? You could do it. That's a deep cut from earlier in our podcast if you were listening to our next segment, which is the Weird Watch of the Week.
Weird Watch of the Week. So, you lead. What is your Netflix fixation this week?
It's not Netflix. My Weird Watch was supposed to be Rampage, but Caroline Darney and Chris Rosenthal could not make that a priority, so it'll have to wait. I want you all to know, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm here for Flying Wolves. I'll always be here for Giant Flying Wolves. So, it'll happen eventually. Instead of something actually weird, I'm going to recommend something that isn't on Netflix.
Oh.
Although, I guess it's like Netflix's older brother, younger brother. It's on Amazon Prime. It's a show called Bosch. Have you heard of this show?
No.
Okay. I knew that. I don't know why I asked.
What did you think?
I just, if it's like tasteful, I'm sure you haven't heard of it. It's a modern detective noir based on a book series. I haven't read the books. I'm not one of those book readers. Not smug. I am, but just not because of books. I really like how it's shot. The fourth season of the show dropped on Friday. I watched the first three episodes. It's multiple mysteries. It's kind of like a mystery cop show. It shows the interplay between different parts of the police department. The lead of the show is Titus Welliver, who a lot of people will probably remember as the man in black on Lost. Did you watch Lost, Dan? Dan didn't watch Lost. I can tell by the look on his face. Don't answer. He's also the cop in The Town that wasn't John Hamm. You saw The Town.
The Ben Affleck movie.
Yeah. Whose cop are we going to take?
Oh, that guy.
Okay. I can't do accents with you either. Also, he was on Deadwood. Anyway, he's great. The show is solid. I recommend it if you're into police procedurals or cop shows in general. So tell me your weird watch.
So inspired by our Heat weird watch challenge, that's what I'm calling it now. There's a lot of good...
You mean when I try to culture you with good movies?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to do the reverse and culture you with crap. So that's cool. That's coming. We're going to get you watching lots of SpongeBob.
God damn it.
We're going to get him to watch some SpongeBob, Schmeedy, Werber, Jaeger, Man, Jensen. I was inspired. So I was like, let's find all the movies from the 90s that I haven't seen on Netflix. And Netflix is releasing some really heavy hitters in this department. So I watched Seven, starring Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, like 1995, 96. I did not enjoy it.
What? This is a hotter take than the ACC Big Ten. It's a hotter take that you did not like
Seven.
So this
seems like a really, really basic grade. But I just didn't like the fact that it was raining all the time in the movie.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It takes away from the setting.
No, it adds to the setting. That's the whole point. You know how hard it is to make rain in a movie? You think it's real rain? It's not real rain.
No, it's not real rain. But I guess that's
go ahead. Just get it over
with. I don't know. It kind of felt like a comic book movie. That was
what?
I don't know. It kind of felt like a cheap comic book movie.
Oh my god.
I just saw the ending coming too. Like, and I know you're gonna hit me with, but that's because it invented the tropes.
It is. It's the first movie where the bad guy wins. Spoiler.
Oh man.
It is though. It's one. It's not the first. It's one of. It started that as a trope. It's like, oh, the bad guy won.
Oh, so contrarian.
Yeah, but it's not contrarian if it's the first one. It's groundbreaking.
All right.
The direction is groundbreaking. It's groundbreaking for Brad Pitt, Gwyneth Paltrow, Morgan Freeman.
I'm sorry. I continually disappoint.
Oh god.
So actually, though. Let's add on to the Weird Watch real quick. I'm hearing great things about this movie, A Quiet Place.
I saw it.
Dang it. I was going to see if you want to see it tonight.
No. I saw it already. Do not go into this movie with food or any level of gas. You will get found out quick, fam. I'm not saying how I know, but you'll get found out. Don't be eating popcorn in this movie. They do not. There are no words, real, actual speaking voice words, until like an hour into the movie. So you got to be real patient. It's good. I liked it. It's not great, but it's really good. It's solid. It's short, which is the best thing you can say about it. Kind of relies on CGI for the quote unquote monsters, but still very good. Tense. Again, just if you have problems with, like, you know, kind of tightening up and not being able to enjoy stuff, this is not the movie for you. But if you like being not scared, but if you like being like too far into something and like kind of lose yourself in a movie, you will lose yourself in A Quiet Place. You might not find yourself after, but you'll lose yourself in it.
So I feel like, you know, some people have said that on Twitter. I feel like I should go to this movie by myself and film myself watching the movie. Kind of like a real hot seat.
It's like literally?
Because I would probably be scared to death, right?
It's just like...
Let's be real. I'm squeamish when it comes to horror movies.
We've reached peak millennial Dan. Just now, if you're listening to this podcast, if you're watching on the live stream, Dan just went peak millennial. I'm going to film me watching this movie that I paid for. So you can see me classic. Just, we're at a different level, people. Different level. You could do that. That's technically what Blair Witch was, I guess. So you could just film. Why don't you just go strap a camera, run around in the woods, and then I'll hide in a house and jump out and scare you.
Oh, it'd be truly horrifying.
It's a good movie. And I made a Blair Witch Blair Witch Project reference, which, do you know what that is?
Yes.
Okay.
It was filmed in Maryland. Thank you, Ty. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, let's go straight to the scoreboard because there are more horror movies in the scoreboard than we expected.
Oh, God.
Let's start with a real scary one. Loyola 23, BU9. Oh. Bruh.
Yo, if a goalie scores from his own cage, the game should end. Like, right there.
It's like catching the snitch.
It counts for 10 goals. That was a Harry Potter reference. Good one. It counts for 10. Game over. Because even though it doesn't exist in real life that you would get more than one goal, it might as well. It's the most deflating thing that can happen in a lacrosse game, and it happened to be you, Jacob Stover, making it rain. Do you think that it's the worst thing that can happen in a lacrosse game, besides a player getting hurt or something? It is.
A goalie goal is the worst thing that can happen, but a full field goalie goal can't be the worst thing. A goalie goal, like, behind the back is probably the worst thing.
Okay.
Like, if that happens, like your team should just disintegrate.
Yeah, you just leave.
You just, like, you have to quit lacrosse. You're barred from the game.
You pull LeBron James and leave before the clock runs out.
Ooh.
Sportsman.
Damn. So, BU's still alive, right?
Yeah, so with the loss, BU is still not out of it because there's a four-way tie for the last two spots in the Patriot League because of our next game, which is
Holy Cross 12, Colgate 10. Definitely an upset here. Yeah.
Yeah. 120 million percent. With this win, the Crusaders move to 2-5, and now they have the tiebreaker over Colgate, which BU also does. So if Holy Cross can beat BU next Friday and Army loses to Loyola, they will slink into the back door of the Patriot League playoffs. What the heck is happening? How'd this happen?
That's nuts. And the crazy thing is that those aren't outlandish scenarios.
No, those are likely scenarios.
Damn.
You never can't be counted out. I mean, the Patriot League playoffs are like six teams. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big league.
I swear, man.
It's a big league.
I stand by my take on the Patriot League. It is the final circle in Fortnite. 10 players enter. Some guy just gets shot from behind. Anything can happen, right?
Hey,
once you're in there, anybody can win.
Fortnite, work on your shooting mechanics and then call me, okay? Garbage. Next.
Georgetown 13, Villanova 11. This was one that drew a few eyes towards it.
Yeah, it was actually tough to find a video stream of this, but I didn't get to watch it. But the result has to have Villanova supporters just scratching their heads. But I will tell you this, I've been saying for weeks that Nick Morocco, if he has a great game, Georgetown has a great game. Guess what? Dude had 15 saves for the Hoyas. One important thing to note, G-Town attackman Daniel Beccaro, who had 5 goals and 1 assist in this game, limped off the field when the game ended. So make sure to check back with IL this week on his status. The Hoyas play NJIT next week, so they probably don't need him in the lineup. But they are away to St. John's the week after in a game that they need to win to secure their spot in the Big East tournament. They have it right now at 2-2, but they still need that St. John's win to secure it.
Kyle, next game we're talking about, Duke 18, UVA 13.
Dan, why isn't this the headline game?
Because this wasn't on TV? Well, also,
it's a good answer. It's a good answer.
This was close to being a prime game for a while. And then Duke slammed the door with like 5 or 6 straight goals to open the fourth quarter. This is a real anecdote. I'm coming home and I hear that this game is close at the end of the third quarter. Mm-hmm. I'm so fired up to open my laptop and watch this game. It's 18-11. I was like, but it was like 12-11 2 minutes ago.
Nope.
What happened?
Duke happened.
Yeah, so, you know, we've talked about the whole UVA can't win in the ACC. The whole, like, UVA can't beat Duke is almost equally as crazy. Because apparently they've lost, like, 18 of the last 19 games against Duke. That's crazy.
So one of the things that I'm willing to concede, because I've gotten into so many arguments about this, is that I concede that a certain team can have your number. Like, I get that. Like, I understand how the history of a team can impact your game. I just don't buy that every team in your conference has your number.
Okay.
And everyone should feel bad for you. I think that's dumb. I think there's a lot of other factors that contribute to you losing that many games that have nothing to do with, oh, I don't know, we haven't beaten them in a while. I don't think we can do it, guys. Like, that's not how it works. That's not how sports work. Sorry. That's like how Little League sports work. That's not how NCAA Division I athletics work in any sport, except maybe bowling. Watch the Women's Bowling Championship. Great unis. It was on after the Q's game.
Weird watch the week.
No, it was awesome. You don't bowl?
I bowl.
Yeah.
Holiday party, I won, remember?
Did you?
Yeah.
That's because I didn't bowl.
Oh, I see.
Next game. Next game.
Yale 27, Brown 15.
Bruh.
Bruh. Bruh.
Bruh.
What?
Bruh.
This is a football score.
What is
Brown
this?
Brown converted a two-pointer.
Why? Oh, well, we kind of know why. So neither one of us had time to watch this game, but word is, there was an ejection. JJ and Cyclo cleaned out Gaudet from Yale on the crease. And I think at that point, Coach Shea was like, release the hounds. Let's go. Or release the Elis, as it were. and it did not go well for Brown. Did not go well. Because Yale was not letting up on the neck at all.
Yeah, this is like, this is just bad. What am I more surprised about? Yale getting to 27 or the fact that there's 42 total goals?
I think you're more surprised about Yale getting to 27. That's an angry Yale team getting to 27. I don't think we're going to see that every week. But the fact that we know that they can do it, now I think if you're paying attention, you should rate Yale just a little bit higher, maybe.
Damn.
Yeah.
This isn't even like a mollywhopping. We need a new word for 27 goals.
If you got a new word for 27 goals,
please at us.
At us on Twitter.
Jeez. Huge upset in the next one. Stony Brook 8, Vermont 7 in double overtime. Catamounts. Oh, slip on this one.
Yeah, tuned in just in time to see Vermont give up the game winner. But man, I feel like this means so much more for the Seawolves than the Catamounts. Like, UVM will slide hard in the polls, but they're still in good shape in the America East. They have the tiebreaker over UMass Lowell. And their final conference game is against UMBC in 2 weeks. So we won't really know where they're going to shake out, but chances are they're definitely going to make that tournament. And they're probably one of the more feared teams in the America East. You know, Albany's in there. Stony Brook will be in there. UMass Lowell or UMBC are probably the likely teams that will also be in. So they're definitely – I want to see Albany, Vermont anyway.
Yeah.
I think that first one was – that first time they played each other was – that was a mollywhopping for Albany. I think the second time around we could see a better result.
Hoping so. Next game, Marquette 12, Providence 11 in overtime. This game got a lot of eyeballs because there was a crazy goal-scoring output within a short amount of time, like 5 goals in like the last minute and 37 seconds of the game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what?
We talked earlier about UNC battling and still losing against Syracuse. And again, we don't support moral victories, but we acknowledge them. This is a loss. There are losses that hurt. This is a loss that is bad. It was a bad, bad loss for Providence. They had the hottest date at the prom. Then they watched in horror as she danced with everyone else but them. And then they got dumped for a Swedish exchange student on the way back after the party.
Ooh.
So another L for the Friars. Another tight Marquette dub. My question is this. Epic collapse or genius comeback?
Oh.
Come on.
I feel like it's always a little bit of both.
Always? 5 goals in like 2 minutes?
Well, we got to give props to our boy, John Wagner, his 5th overtime winner of the season. 5th or 4th? Like,
yeah.
Dude is clutch. Like, his middle name is clutch. Look on the birth certificate. I swear. That's insane. Imagine being that clutch.
Imagine that.
Imagine. Could never be me. Can't be me. Next game, Cornell 12, Lehigh 10. Lehigh kind of made it run late, just a little too too late.
Four goals in the fourth. Did I think Cornell would lose this game at any point? No. Why wasn't I worried? Because Lehigh couldn't manufacture offense. They would get four or five passes deep into a set and then reverse the ball. It was CAA offense. But the highly praised Big Red attack had moments where they looked just as bad. And they were making turnovers. They were not connecting on passes to the interior. You know, some devil-may-care situations opened up the door for Lehigh. And they what Cornell should have done is slam it on their face. And they just – they didn't. They finished the game. They won the game. Credit to them. But I feel like Cornell not scoring – I think we said this earlier in the podcast – not scoring 15 here, a little bit of a letdown.
A little bit. I mean, they had a short week, shorter week than most. They played Syracuse midweek, so give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. Lehigh, man, probably, you know, I feel like they're a team that might slip out of the top 20 because they're on a bit of a losing streak, but they have so many quote-unquote quality losses. Like, they've lost to all good teams.
There's no such thing.
I know.
None.
I know you're not a believer, but they're losing to good teams.
Yeah.
It's just weird. It's
still
weird.
Losing. Win your games.
Win your games, yes.
Speaking of which.
Yeah, so UMass 8, Towson 4.
This pains me because even though Towson is in Maryland, and I genuinely pretty much hate everything Maryland, the Tigers have fallen and they can't get up. And I like Towson, but I can't back them after this result. UMass coming out, led by Coach Cannella, who was the subject of a profile by our own Matt Kinnear earlier this week on InsideTheCross.com. Check that out.
Yeah, so when I was thinking about picking this game, I was like, you know what? UMass is playing some really good lacrosse, good offense, Noah Rack, their face-off specialist, having a great year. But I was like, every time I feel like I doubt Towson is when they snag it, you know?
This is how you got 5-1. You almost had a perfect week.
I know.
And then this is the game that got you.
Dang it.
Because I had 5-1. As well, for my fourth week in a row.
Oh, okay.
So.
But, yeah, like, you know, it's just turning out to be a frustrating season for Towson, and it's looking like it's going to be an uphill battle to get that CAAQ, which is what's gotten them to the tournament the past couple years.
Yep.
Right now, UMass and I think Hofstra are the teams to beat.
Oh, UMass. I don't rate Hofstra. We've been there.
Okay.
We talked about it last week.
But anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Anything can happen. Any rock fight can turn out for a different caveman.
UMass,
that's a fact.
UMass Hofstra last year.
Yes.
Oh, crazy, yeah. Crazy.
It's true.
Stuff.
It's true.
Crazier stuff has happened.
Can't trust goalies. All right.
God.
We're moving on to the Adam Shevelambide's play of the week. And for me, there is no question. It's the goalie goal from Jacob Stover. The best part about this goal, and I think I've watched it 10 times now. The best part is that the BU Poles are frantically trying to bat the ball out of the air, and they fail so comically that I almost felt sorry for them. Ball kind of like just trickles in. Almost felt sorry for them, but ultimately not.
I agree because, like, watching the broadcast clip of this goal happen, the broadcaster's like, well, that's the end of the half. And then you can kind of see, like, the BU Poles are like, wait, he released it before the whistle. We got to go get it. He's like, oh, it's like a frantic scramble. You see it go in. Jacob Stover has looked away. The broadcasters have looked away. The only people who are watching are, like, the Loyola bench. And they're like, wait, that's a goal. We did it. He scored. Let's go.
Yeah.
And it's just, and like, that's going to count as a goal. That's going to count.
I think it did count as 10 goals. Because 23-9.
Yeah.
Ugh.
This was like a Zoinks close Scooby. Game at halftime.
It was.
That is
was.
A Zoinks Scooby. You yeah. are right. Damn.
100%. I said 100% again. Damn it.
Yeah, we're trying to work on the cliches.
Edit that. We're trying to get rid of our ticks.
Edit that.
It's none of my business.
Yeah. All right, Kyle. That's pretty much our show. A little bit of a short one, considering how much we've had to talk about.
Too much energy. Too much.
Too much energy.
Too much.
A little too early in the day, maybe.
Yeah, it's only 70.
It's only 7.
Like the sun barely went down. It's not an after dark.
We're feeling okay about ourselves.
No, it's good.
It's just like I said at the beginning of the podcast, I feel like my top 20 vote this week feels a lot more, I feel a lot more sure about who I'm voting for. Like, we know who the teams are. I feel like the big risers this week will be Navy. I mean, like I said, they're looking at hosting this tournament.
In my top 20, for sure.
Absolutely. 8-4. And just really, you know, we didn't talk about the Army-Navy game at all.
I told you to put it on the rundown. You didn't want to do it.
I know. So we got to talk about this real quick.
Are we going to do it before we leave? Okay.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
Let's do it. Army loses to Navy, 9-8. Second straight year that the midshipmen have nipped the Black Knights. We kind of felt like if Army was going to salvage their season, it would start with a game here. It would start with a win here.
Yeah, I want to talk about two things that I think everyone's going to key in this game. One is the goal that Navy scored that shouldn't have been a goal at the end of that first half. Long pull, scored it on the run. On the replay, and even the announcers said this, it was not in time, and it still counted. So that's mistake one. Mistake two, I think, is Army still got four real quality, amazing looks off on the Navy defense. Any one of those shots could have gone in, should have gone in. Couple were blocked, deflected. Two great saves from Kern there at the end. You felt like Army was in it, even though at one point Navy had a three-goal lead. But that last stand by that Navy defense was truly a last stand. Like, I'm not going to make an Iwo Jima joke. I was going to, and now I'm not. But
you kind of just did.
I kind of did, so sorry. But it was a great stand by the Navy.
Yeah, props to Navy. This just gets them. I think that they're going to give Syracuse a scare, win or lose, when they play next weekend. Navy is playing well, and they are a team that wins faceoffs, plays good defense, is methodical on offense, and always seems to play at their pace.
They lost control of this game a couple times. It looked like if Army, I think, could connect on a couple more shots that they had good looks. David Symes had several bombs that I felt like when he shot it, I went, oh, that's a goal. And then it's like, boom. Nope, it's in the stance. So I think that if Army can hone in on that and maybe get a little closer to the net, Connor Glancy was very good in this game for them as well. I don't know. I do like Syracuse a lot more just in that matchup. I think they just have so much individual dodging and scoring talent that I don't think it's going to be close. But I've been wrong before.
I think the best part about this game, we haven't mentioned, 15,000 people showed up to see this game. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I know it's Army-Navy, and that kind of transcends the sport, gets everybody in the stands, but that is freaking awesome.
Yes. And Navy did sing second, as predicted, on the Friday IL game day. For yours truly, you can buy a shirt at the Inside the Cross store, insidethecross.com/shop/store.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
I think it's store.
Store. InsideTheCross.com/store.
Watch us be wrong.
Sing second. This year, it's Navy. So, and it is store. We have confirmation. So InsideTheCross.com/store. Check out all the t-shirts there. And maybe you'll see a couple pop up in the coming weeks that might have appeared first on this podcast.
Yes. We are trendsetters, t-shirt-wise.
Yeah. Fun fact, it's shop and store.
Oh, it's shop and store.
Get you there.
See?
It's a shop store.
It's impossible to be wrong on the In the Crease podcast.
Kyle, that is our show for this weekend. I feel like we're starting to turn a corner with the weather, so that's a huge positive. It's been an awful season for weather. Today was bad at Maryland Rutgers, but we are looking down the barrel. Memorial Day is coming up. It's going to be a beautiful weekend in Foxborough. I can't believe it's already almost here.
I got to be honest. You can't guarantee that because it's Foxborough. But I just hope people are turning the corner in their life. You know? And one way your life can get better, follow us on Twitter. Follow me on @TheKyleDevitt on Twitter and Instagram. And Dan, where can they get you?
If you want your life to take a turn for worse on Twitter, follow @Dan_Abird. Thank you guys for listening. We always appreciate the listen. Thank you so much. Thank you to everybody on the live stream.
Hey.
We are signing off.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to go get Chipotle.
Peace.